You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends, and welcome. My guest today is Marta Spurk, and the topic of the day is decisions about career change after having, wait for it, triplets. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting, Marta Spurk. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
Yes, I'm so ready. Thanks for having me.
Yay. My two warm-up questions that I start every conversation with: what part of the world do you call home?
I am in Denver, Colorado.
Beautiful. Love that. And what is something that you love about being in Denver?
I have to say the different seasons, although this year we kind of skipped winter, but I'm from Brazil originally, and I'm sure we'll get to that at some point, but in Brazil, it's pretty much the same thing all year long. I mean, we do get, you know, lower temperatures, rain, all of that good stuff, but fall and then winter and then spring and then summer, it's awesome. I love it.
Very cool. That's actually a big change because Brazil, you're all the way in the southern hemisphere. It's like your life was turned upside down. Like not the seasons per se, but like the school year and all of that.
Everything.
Yeah. I went off topic completely, but when my kids were younger, I actually had a friend who, she and her husband were Brazilian. And so they went back every summer, and her kids did not know that their friends had the summer off from school. She just enrolled them in school over the summer also in Brazil. So they didn't know what summer vacation was. Anyway, really funny. All right. Very good. Not part of the story. All right. So very good. I mentioned a second ago in the intro that part of this story is actually about triplets. In order to get a sense just of the timeline for the audience around the decisions that we're going to talk about today, would you share with us how old are the kids today when we're recording this in 2026?
Yes. So they just turned 10 a couple of months ago, which is a huge milestone. And it's hard to believe that I've been a mom for a decade, but that's where we are.
That is amazing. Fantastic. All right. So the topic today is not fertility or family planning or even actually your family, but I don't get to talk to people who have triplets every single day of the week. I have a lot of friends that have had and acquaintances that have gone through twins, life with twins. But in all of my many, many years and aged experience, I only know, I think, two people who've lived the life of raising triplets. From my view as an outsider, it appears to take a team of people to do this. Just going to say that. two quick questions, if you're up to it, because I suspect that people in the audience are a little bit curious. The first one, are they identical or fraternal? That's the thing that everybody always wants to know about multiples.
Yes. So they are fraternal. So I have two boys and one girl, and the boys are not identical. So they are as different as they get and on so many levels.
So they're just siblings who happen to all be born on the same day. Yeah. So,
absolutely. That's it.
All right. So then the next question that everybody wants to know, and this is a little bit personal, but you've probably get asked this all the time. Was this something that like is biological, lottery winning, runs in your family multiples, or did you happen to be on like a fertility journey that increased your chances for multiples?
Yes, I was on a fertility journey after we had the triplets. One of my husband's cousins had twins, so maybe we started a trend, I like to say. I don't know. But yeah, so I had irregular cycles from the moment we decided to start trying. After about a year of nothing happening is when I started looking into, okay, let's run some extra tests. Let's see what's happening. And I was diagnosed with mild endometriosis. I had to have a procedure, a non-invasive procedure to correct that. And also was diagnosed with PCOS.
Wow.
Which meant the ovulation process was not, regular. And so I had shots of stimulating ovulation. So these are the initial stages pre-IVF, because typically when people think fertility, they think in vitro. And there are so many other things that go on before you go into the most extreme one, you know, and most invasive, really, and expensive, which is in vitro. So mine was that initial one of stimulating ovulation. And within 2 weeks of the first cycle, I got pregnant and it was triplets right off the bat.
Very cool. So stimulating ovulation, not a doctor, not my expertise. That did that come with the warning? It's like, we may release a bunch of eggs here. You have a chance that you could, okay.
So The warning was you could potentially get pregnant with twins. That was the warning I got. And it was interesting because I had a friend that had gone to that same doctor. She was in her 40s. So, as you know, as you get older, things happen. That's why she sought help. And she was very successful because pretty quickly she got pregnant with one child. So, when he told me that, I was like, it's all good. I want to get pregnant. I don't care. And then triplets came.
What was it like? So you were open to the idea of multiples, but triplets is a lot. What was it? Were there a few days, a couple moments where you're like, "Wow, what are we going to do here?"
Yeah, I was terrified on so many levels because it was my first pregnancy too, and I had been reading books and studying and had a couple of friends that were a little older and had gone through the journey. And in Brazil, things are a little bit different in terms of healthcare, and things are changing over the last few years, but for the most part, C-sections are the norm. You already go into this thinking, I am not going to have a natural delivery, and I'm okay with that because I'd rather schedule it. And I had friends that were like, we're against this. Let's have natural delivery. Let's have home birth. Let's have water birth. So I was totally in that vibe of I'm going to be a natural, And then right off the bat, when I knew it was triplets, I knew a lot of that was off the table immediately. So it was the shock, the scare, obviously the risk because it's a high risk pregnancy. My size, I am 5'2",
Oh my
so I'm
goodness,
really
you were all
small.
baby.
Yeah. And but also kind of like the dreams, which with having children, those the bubbles get popped real fast of, I'm gonna breastfeed for years and I'm gonna do all these things, right? So it was a lot of grieving, I would say, in the first trimester. It was the toughest, I'm gonna say. And then physically, obviously, moving later in the pregnancy. And then once they were out, obviously too, but I think that first trimester was the hardest of all, was coming to terms with this is my future now.
That's a really, I mean, you're 10 years out of it, but that's a really enlightened way to describe it. I think that, so I mispronounced this word and somebody corrected me on it recently, but I'm still going to mispronounce it because I can't remember the right way to say it. The matrescence, which is the, or matrescence, that's the word we use to describe like the change between a person who's never grown a human being in their body and the person who is a mom. Okay, so that's the word to describe that process. Matrescence? Somebody can correct me. Anyway, a big part of that for modern women is really that reckoning with what your expectations are and what's actually happening. And the most extreme versions of that are what you went through. Like you were ready, you were thinking one baby, maybe two, and then the changes with a very medically supervised pregnancy and delivery that comes with triplets. And the other ones, when you find out that there's, complications of any kind with the baby, and then, and it can happen at any time, but it is a thing that keeps going on. We do an excellent job of hyping up young women for baby showers and nursery decoration and a little bit less in getting us ready for the actual nuts and bolts, which is just an observation on the way we do things. So not a criticism, but I appreciate that you shared your experience with that because I think that most people in their journey of pregnancy, parenthood, any of those things, they do have to reconcile those two things. And it is very much often a thing of grief, like it's like, I thought this was going to happen and that's not what's happening. All right. So there we go. Before you had the Kindlingers, you say you worked in languages and transition, and I'd love to learn a little bit more about that. Like, what were you doing? How did you get into that? I'm going to guess it has something to do with the fact that you hail from Brazil. How did you get into that field? Did you love it? Tell me all the things.
Yes, absolutely. So I think it really was something I was born with. Obviously, in Brazil, there's a huge influence of American culture, as it is in most countries around the world, with music, with movies. It is very encouraged. I mean, we learn English as a second language in school, but every other corner, there is a language school for you to take private lessons. So that's, think extracurriculars. The go-to is you're going to take English after you're done with school. You're going to do it a couple times a week, right? And you're going to take standardized tests. You're going to do things like with Cambridge and Oxford to put that in your resume. That's how we do life. So it was already part of just life, but I kind of took it to the next level because I was very interested. And I'm a very musical person too, so I think that had a lot to do with that. The sounds, and just expressing myself, it was very interesting to me to the point where, as a teenager, when kids were doing those standardized tests to have those diplomas to add to their resume eventually, I started tutoring my friends because they were like, "Oh, you're the little American, you know things." So it's kind of like I already knew what I was going to be doing with my life by the time I was 14 because it was a given. Like, Marta is the English speaking one. That's her thing. It's not math, it's not physics, definitely not physics, but it's the languages, And so when I had to decide, because in Brazil, you don't have those 2 years where you're kind of deciding what your major is going to be in college. You have to take an entry exam and already pick your major.
Okay.
And I already knew what I wanted to do. And it wasn't just teaching, it was translation. And the reason that is because my mom is a pastor in Brazil. And at around that same time that I was already, growing in interest with English, she started receiving American ministers in her church to minister to our church. And in the off conversations, I would be helping with translating and interpreting. But eventually, by the time I was 18, I was appointed as the interpreter because I was older, I had been around enough, and I was an in-house, interpreter that my mom could rely on. And that's the major that I chose in one of the universities that was, super close to us and that was reputable was translation. And what was cool about that too is that I already knew that as part of their curriculum, they would be teaching us French. And I don't know necessarily why French as opposed to Spanish, maybe because it's a little bit farther out from Portuguese than Spanish is. And I started studying French even before I graduated high school because I was like, I know it's not required of me, but I love languages so much that I want to take this on. So I had an awesome time doing my bachelor's as a translator because I kind of already had a job with my mom, but at the same time, I was teaching in different schools, getting into the market, so to speak, of interpreters in Brazil is a little bit more challenging because there's a lot more people that speak English than there are offers, and especially being a young person in the career, you're not seen as credible. You don't have as great of a reputation as somebody that's been doing it for decades. So my work was reduced to teaching a lot. And I had kind of like a break in the industry because one of my friends that moved overseas over high school, she started working for NBC Universal.
Yep.
And she would be a part of the international or foreign movies team. That needed subtitles and translation for Brazilian movies into English. So I got to dabble into that, which was a lot of fun to like see movies before they come out and have to think about, this is native to me in Portuguese. How do I translate that into another language? Because typically I'm doing the opposite, right? Is translating things in English to Portuguese. So that was a fun thing. That's what I was doing up until the time I had kids.
Okay.
And what I often, I'm still in that space, but then things switched.
Very cool. Now that's a very interesting. So most of my audience is definitely in the United States, but I do live in Miami, which is where a lot of the Brazilian and a lot of the television work for for NBC and Universal that is done for Central and South America, they have offices here, and it's a really common thing that people will do here. We have more Spanish and Portuguese production than we probably have English production, if I was to be honest. Right? They call us the gateway of the Americas for a reason. So you studied, so you grew up in Portugal, in Brazil where they speak Portuguese, and so then you speak Portuguese, English, French, and I'm going to guess Spanish. Okay. Yeah. Anything else that you threw in there?
I started trying to teach myself Italian while I was pregnant and bored out of my mind on bed rest, but it's not the same as actually taking lessons. That is something I would love to do, is to be fluent in Italian.
So, and then are you considered at this point? I don't know are you considered a polyglot? Like, where does the line go for people who
I
speak all
think
those
so
languages?
because, I mean, you could say trilingual, maybe, if they know three languages, but typically, if you know more than two languages, people will count that as, you know, something extra, but maybe.
No, I don't know where they draw the line for that. So I think that's really interesting. Okay, so you mentioned that you had an interest in music. In the bio you gave me for this show, you actually said that you were a singer. And so I did want to ask whether or not that was something that you do as part of like a career path. Is it a hobby? Is it just a piece of your character? Where does that fit into who Marta is?
Yeah, interestingly enough, I believe that before I started my current business, which we'll get to, it was more on the hobby side because that was something that started with church, right, and grew with me. And after me starting my current business, I started understanding I get to play with the different facets of who I am. And I can absolutely have things that are just hobbies, but I'm the type of person that likes going all in. So in the recent years, I have infused more of music in the work that I do and stepped out into releasing my own music and all owning that piece of my identity more publicly, I guess, and not just leaving it as a hobby.
Oh, I love it. All right. Very, very cool. All right. So, massive change in your life. Three babies join the family. And you mentioned in your description of the topic when you presented it that you felt like your choice, you started to feel like your choice was to go back to work or commit to being a stay-at-home mom. And what you end up doing is you choose option C, which is that you go on your own, out on your own path. We're going to talk about that in a second, but I want to take a minute and put you back into that time, maybe not 10 years ago, but when you were thinking about actually making this change. I don't know how old the babies were when you were like, this is where we're making this decision. But if you can put yourself into the mindset of when you were making that decision, I want to talk about the options. Like, what were you thinking that was good or not so good about the options when it came to going back to work?
So when, because we had the babies in Brazil and then we moved back to America, my husband's American,
Okay.
and the agreement, quote unquote, that we had was you're going to stay home with the kids, right? Because there's three of them and I'm going to go to work, my husband said. And at that time, which we moved when they were 9 months old, so, you know, even before they turned one, which that's a whole other story in its own, I was already kind of feeling antsy. Because of my personality of, you know, just being outgoing and doing things. And I think part of that grieving that we talked about was also the career path of when you have a baby, you're out of commission, so to speak, for a few months, and then you go back into it because it's one baby. But then with the three, that was very nebulous. Like, what does that look like? 18 years? I don't know. And that's scary for me as somebody that has started working when I was 14, you know, like already getting paid or feeling productive or whatever it was that I felt. So it was at that time that I started searching for things to do at home. So in my mind, I was thinking I could do some stuff part time. I could, you know, bring in some money, feel productive, not only for my family, but for myself, right? Have
Yeah.
some outside world connection. I think that's a lot of where my mind was. So I started doing online teaching English. I reconnected with a school that I taught in Brazil that is international, so they have things all over the world and virtual. So that's kind of where I was at. So the decision of you're just going to be home with the kids switched or changed fairly quickly because of just my need, you know, of doing something, but it wasn't immediate in terms of what I'm doing right now. It
Okay.
was a process, yeah.
So what was good about the idea of going back to work, which was more complicated because you were not in the same city where you had been working before. So some of your network was removed. And I'll come back to that in a second because I think that that's something that hits on something we don't always talk about. And then when we're talking about the choice between stay at home with the kids all the time or go back to work. You are really driven here at this point. Like you get some identity, a piece of who you are seems to sound like it comes from, I have something outside of just being a caregiver to the army of children.
Yes, Absolutely, you put it beautifully.
Yeah, so I think it's not an uncommon thing. Not everybody feels it. A lot there are people out there who have full and complete that this is what they want. This is what they want is to be there at home and be with the people all the time. But there are other women who they don't. They get a lot of satisfaction out of other things in their life, and so it's finding the balance. And in some circles, it gets pitted against each other, like a choice of either or. But I think that's unfair to people. I think that, some people like chocolate cake and some people like yellow cake, and it's not a value judgment. So there we go. So you choose option C, which is to go into business for yourself. And so you were sort of freelancing or contracting with the company as a remote teacher. You were an employee, maybe whatever that was. How did that first start, where you started to think, okay, the better option here is for me to build something on my own?
So 10 years ago, 2016, and things are kind of similar, but they have shifted a lot, obviously, in the online space. There was a lot of talk of, make a quick, buck here and there online by sharing other people's products, kind of like influencer, but through network marketing or direct sales. We still have that, but I remember back in the day, my entire feed, especially for stay-at-home moms, which is where I was at, was sharing some kind of product and also sharing the opportunity, what they call the opportunity,
So let's
quote
think about
unquote.
that. 2016, was this when people were selling like leggings and wraps, like belly wraps? Okay. Yep.
That's
So
it.
the belly wraps. Okay. I do remember that. I do remember that. And so, and when we say I want to, like, one of the things about my audience is that it spans a large age group. So I want to just make sure that everybody is on the same page. When we say, so these are network marketing or multi-level marketing companies, which is just a name. It's like sometimes they get people have strong feelings about them, but that's the, for this conversation, we're just lumping them in. This is what we call them. And so these are products you would sign up as a salesperson and you would earn a commission on those things. And in the 2016, one of the things that was really, really popular were these things called belly wraps, which were for getting your figure back. Is that what they were?
Yeah, I think it was like loose skin, but also tightening, potentially, just better look, feeling good about yourself,
So did you
whatever.
sign on with any of these products firms?
So I signed up with a company that is now called Body, but at the time was Beach Body, and it
Oh
was
yeah.
health and fitness.
I remember Beachbody. Shakes,
Yes.
vitamins, yes, workouts. Lots of
Workouts,
workouts, yes. They were many, many people in my DMs. What was the opening for those conversations? Are you interested in getting healthy? Would you like to join? Yeah.
Absolutely. I have a free group, accountability.
There you go. There you go. I got a lot of those. But I have nothing bad to say about Beachbody or anybody who's. I know many, many people who really enjoyed working with them for years. And the workouts, people really like them.
I actually still have a subscription and I still work out at home. So that piece really worked out for
Yeah,
me.
that's what I'm saying.
But
It's good.
yeah, it got my foot in the door into understanding, because that's how they frame it, is you're a business owner now. And I started seeing myself that way, because even being a contractor, you don't necessarily feel that way. But then when they're saying, this is your business and you get to decide how many hours you work and how what you do, et cetera. But I would say that after about a year, year and a half, as I started watching other people in the online space that were not necessarily doing this type of business, I started seeing that there was more autonomy. There was a different option. There was option D,
All
which
right.
was you can build your own consulting and coaching, and kind of decide what that looks like and who you work with and how much things are, how you're going to price these things, which that sounded, even more interesting to me. Like, I don't have to get only $100 off of this sale. I can get the entirety of it because it's my product offer, whatever it is. But then I had to figure out what that was going to be like. But that's where my mind started going, especially in the personal development space. And that's where I eventually went to. Because inside the network marketing, obviously, they give you support in terms of your mindset. You need to start thinking as a business owner now, especially if, a stay-at-home mom, I have no idea what you're talking about. They would encourage you to watch these videos and follow, thought leaders like Tony Robbins and all of these people and read books. And here I am thinking, this is very similar to what I experienced in church, even, right? Have preachers, they go, they share their life story, their thoughts, they write books. I know this. This is not foreign to me. And I thought, I can do this too. I can be one of those people. I don't want to be just another one that sells the workouts. I want to be the one that's invited to talk to the group, you know? So that's my forward thinking was that, like, I want to be that person versus the other person. And that's the path that I chose.
All right. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. So I'm going to ask you something that might be a little bit of a direct question, but the reason is that I just don't think that we talk, and I don't think that this type of question gets enough of a spotlight when we talk about going into business for ourselves. So there's no judgment or anything. You mentioned that they draw you in to some things by offering the opportunity of doing things. And I would say the flashy side of when we talk about working for ourselves and building our own business is, you know, freedom and the possibility and all of these things. But a lot of people that I talk to after being in business for myself for decades actually get started because they don't have a job offer, or the job offers that they might have just really don't actually fit in their life. So like if a dream job had come along, they would have jumped into it, you know, but didn't. And so they were like, sure, fine, I'll do it by, fine, okay, if I must, I'll do it by myself. So you, the question is, like, did you start this because you think you have a deep desire to build something for yourself from scratch, or did you start this because you were looking for all of the options and there really just wasn't another good option?
I honestly think that it was both, because after having kids, it was almost like it was a huge divider of waters. Like, the old Marta is gone, okay. You know, it's something completely new. And the new Marta, so to speak, has thoughts and feelings and has gone through a lot. She is not going to be relaying somebody else's message anymore, which is what I did as an interpreter. And that's what an interpreter is supposed to do, you know?
Ah, I
this
see.
Marta wants to talk about what she wants to talk about.
No, I get it. All right. So I think that's a really good answer, both, because in the moment, and I think this, I think that what made me think of this question in the conversation with you is that you started with, it's like, these are the two choices I saw in the beginning. And so really looking at it. And I think that while we would like to believe that in the last 50 or 75 years, the choices for women with young children have changed a lot, the decision-making process is, and I'm not going to say they haven't, the decision-making process is maybe more similar than we like to admit. It's like, it's that process of, what are my options actually, you know? And I joke about this all the time. The awakening I went through, I was like, oh, stunningly, there's no job that is available only when my kids are in preschool from 9 to 11:30 and off every like third day for a holiday. You know, that was not something people were signing up to do. Surprise. Okay. Yeah. All right. So we're going to begin to move towards the final question, but first let's take a minute and talk about what you do, because you didn't actually go back into translating. You built a business where you help women entrepreneurs develop their signature talk. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do.
All right. So walk us through that. Connect the dots. Why is this important for the women you work on to do this? How did you get from translating to mom of newborns to helping women do this?
Yeah. So I didn't obviously see the connection and where I was even going when I started. I did not just open up a business of, let me help you write speeches, because I wasn't even giving speeches at the time because my kids were so small. It was an evolution of coaching first moms and then getting into the entrepreneurial space, because I realized those were the self-motivated people that I wanted to talk to. As an entrepreneur myself, right? I spent a lot of time with marketing and visibility, helping people just put themselves out there, because that's what I was already doing anyway. It's always been really meta on, you know, I'm a few steps ahead. I've done a few things. People notice it because I share so much publicly and they're like, help me. What is this, right? And then especially after I did my TED Talk and I published my book in 2022 was when I started shifting gears into, this is my jam. It's speaking, it's getting on stage, it's creating a cohesive message. But thinking about a connection from my past that makes a lot of sense with all of this is that before I got pregnant in Brazil, I worked for an agency that helped Brazilian high schoolers apply and get into American universities. So it was a very interesting program. They worked with the athletics, right, of sports scholarships, but they had an academic department that was just starting out. And that's when I came in because I was the head of that department. I was like the only person in the department to begin with that was helping them with their personal statements. So they had to talk about themselves, which was very unusual in Brazil because we don't have this process into getting into college. And they didn't know how, and in English, right? So share personal stories and why this motivates me, whatever. So I worked with them. Eventually, when I came to America, I didn't mention this, but I did do my master's in linguistics in Denver once I got married before I had kids. And
Okay.
I worked at the writing center. And that was such a cool piece of my career. I think back to that a lot because I feel like I grew so much in doing a similar type of work, but in English. So it wasn't with Brazilians, it was with Americans or foreign students and helping them make sense out of their thoughts in English. So it was kind of like a precursor of what I do right now. Because essentially, what I do is help people organize their thoughts so that it comes out organized and clear to the listener, you know? And so this is what I do now with women is sit down and have them share their story with me and help them create that thread because it's always there, but we don't see it because we're too close to it, you know? And I love listening to those stories and reflecting that back and making those connections so that they're not starting with in 1989, right? Nobody cares. What's the piece that matters for the audience, you know? And I'm the audience.
I just
So,
yes, no, it's I like so yes, it is it's an important work. Over since I launched this show, I've gotten thousands of people who pitch their decisions, and Marta has gone through this process, and it very clearly says in 2 to 3 sentences, tell me the one thing you want to talk about, and about 1 out of every 50 people submits the life story. You know, once upon a time I was a little girl, then this happened, and then this happened, and this happened. And it's, you know, and it's all very interesting, and it's an important story to tell. But it is, that is a memoir. That is not a 45-minute conversation on a podcast. And so, but it is, so that is the reason that I smiled, because I do see some of that. And I'm like, this is a story that's not quite ready. And I think that that's what you're saying. It's like, you know, it's like sometimes we need help, maybe always. We need help because to figure out how to get it ready, because there's a difference between a story that you want to tell and the story that other people are interested to hear.
Absolutely. You
Yeah.
nailed it.
Yeah. All right. So very good. All right. So this is what you do. You also have a podcast. Share the name of your podcast.
I do. It's called The Empowered Woman. That's also the name of my book. That's part of the brand is, you know, The Empowered Woman shares her voice. And I interview men as well. Really, I like sharing entrepreneurial stories because that's my world, right? Is where did this come from? And a lot of what I just shared here today, I find that it's cool to understand how things begin and make those connections. So it's very storytelling focused.
Very, very nice. All right, and you have a special offer for the audience, which is a free speaking strategy call. Speaking on digital stages and in real life stages is important work for a lot of people. Still reported public speaking, still reported as being a top fear of most people, which has always fascinated me because I have never been afraid of it. Anyway, people can sign up on your website. There's a link in the show notes and in the YouTube description for that. The easiest way for people to get links, this is a shout out I do in every single episode, is to I invite people to join my email community for imperfectadulting.com. I send a weekly newsletter that has highlights of the episodes that are released that week, and it includes all of the links to the special offers. So that's nice because it comes to you instead of you having to chase it down. I want to thank you very much, Marta, for that very generous offer. Are you ready to wrap this up with my final 3 questions?
Yes, I'm excited.
All right, so these are meant to be rapid fire. They're just for fun. They used to all be different, but I did drastically underestimate how much work it was to come up with 3 unique questions for multiple episodes a week. So now I repeat the first two a lot. The first one is multiple choice. Ooh, I wonder. Okay, so because you grew up in Brazil, let's see if this still works from across the cultures. Which of these like generation descriptors matches do you identify with? The silent generation, boomer generation, Gen X, Millennial or Gen Z?
Millennial.
All right. So you heard it here, guys. Marta is a millennial. All right. So do you read or listen to books? And if so, would you want to share as a recommendation for people in the audience looking for something that they would like, a book or a movie or a podcast that they might enjoy?
I have done Audible in the past, but I have to say, nothing beats, in terms of, I think, memory and impact, actually having the book in my hands. Not even digital. That's hard for me as well. It has to be the actual book. And I, with being in the work that I do, I read a lot, and people recommend stuff all of the time, and I buy books and I don't finish them. So I started a practice, I want to say about 3 years ago, that I only read books, for the majority of them, if they are in the library. So I rent out books because that gives me the urgency to finish them, or to just decide I don't want this and I can return it. I don't feel bad about it. But a book recommendation, one that has really stuck out to me, is Napoleon Hill's Outwitting the Devil. He's
Oh,
really
okay.
known for the Think and Grow Rich, but this
Yeah.
other book is just as impactful, and I encourage people to read it if they haven't.
I'd never even heard of that, Outwitting the Devil. Yeah, because the other one, Think and Grow Rich, is the one that you can't even say the word entrepreneur without somebody suggesting
Correct.
that book for you. But so, all right, so Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill, for anybody who is there. I know a lot of people who really like the getting books from the library, and I use Libby for ebooks a lot of the time, but and I've heard that library fines are no longer really a thing, but I have all these kids, and I ran up so many library fines with books we couldn't find to return and missing the deadline that I'm like, it is cheaper for me to buy books. Like, it was. Which is no longer true. I should retrain myself because it is so much better. Because when you buy them, then you have them at home, and if you don't really, really want
Clutter.
them, then you get clutter. Exactly. So this is not a strength of my personality, but that is the true root of it. Is, that just searching through the house for whatever, because we used to go every week, and the kids would pick up piles of books, and there'd be one that wasn't there, and just searching the house as the like pennies like add on. All right, very good. All right, here we go. This also interesting because it's a very American question. We'll see if it lands. Do you eat Girl Scout cookies? And if so, what is your favorite Girl Scout cookie flavor?
I do. So I've been here for almost 13 years. So
Okay.
I've heard of them, and I've gotten to experience them. And I have to say, the Samoas are my favorite.
Samoa's for the win. There we go. That's it, Marta Sperk. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed the show. Before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Please subscribe wherever you're listening or watching the show. That helps my stats. A request from the bottom of my indie creator heart is to please tell your friends about the show. That is the real way new people discover it. If you feel motivated, I would love it if you rated the show or wrote a review on whatever platform you are using. Please be sure to head over to imperfectadulting.com and sign up for the email community. I call this the village. You'll get some free stuff right away, and you'll begin to get the weekly emails that I send. This includes the links for special offers from any guests on the show and cool stuff I put together for the community. There's a lot more going on than just this show, and the only way to find out is to get the emails. Plus, you're busy, you don't have time or desire to follow every single tidbit on social media, and you don't have to because I'm happy to send it to you. If you have a story you'd like to share with the audience, I have an open application for guests. Guess where you'll find it? That's right, on the website and in the emails. And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, remember that the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that just may not mean you're lost. It may mean that you're just on your way. And now the fine print. The Art of Imperfect Adulting podcast and streaming video show is a copyrighted work created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. The music was written and produced by Todd Thompson at Dharma Bomb Studios. All rights are reserved. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy Stone does not intend to hold myself, herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level. Yeah, it's a little weird for me to talk about myself in the third person, but you get the idea. This is Amy Stone, signing off.